The outbreaks of foodborne illnesses in recent years, the salmonella in peanut butter and E. coli in bagged spinach, have led to concerns about the way the FDA is enforcing its food safety regulations. Each of those outbreaks has been traced to a factory farm or large processing plant, but small farmers who have had little connection to them are bearing the brunt of government raids, searches, and product confiscation. A new documentary called Farmageddon investigates the increasingly tenuous legal standing of small farmers in our food system. It opens this Friday at Cinema Village, and joining us now are Kristen Canty, its director and co-producer, Linda Felice, the co-owner of Three Shepherds Cheese in Vermont, and Gary Cox, general counsel for the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Welcome to our show.
Thank you for having us on.
Gary, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Thanks, Leonard.
Well, let's begin with Kristen, who's in my studio. How did you come to make a film about the challenges being faced by small farmers?
Basically, I was just mortified when I found out that farmers, small farmers and co-op owners around the country were being raided by the government, and I couldn't sleep at night until I tried to do something about it. And so that turned into somehow making a documentary about it.
But Gary, how long have you worked with the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, and what's the group's mission?
Well, I've been with the fund since 2006, but we were actually organized and launched in July 4th of 2007. And the mission statement of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund is basically to defend the rights of farmers and to protect the rights of consumers to engage in direct transactions when it comes to agricultural products produced on the farm.
And those are the kind of cases that you work on?
Oh, yeah, all over the United States. I have so many cases in so many states where the government is trying to crack down on the producers. It's keeping me very busy.
But why do we need a legal group to defend farmers and consumers? Aren't farmers the basic pathway for our food? Farmers to eaters?
Well, there's two types of farmers, really. There's the small-scale farmers like, Linda, who's engaged in artisanal cheese making. And then you've got the large-scale agribusiness farmers who grow corn, soybeans, and wheat, which is mainly to be consumed by hogs and cattle. So when the government talks about agriculture, they're talking about large-scale agriculture, which really, in my opinion, really doesn't feed the country. It's the small-scale farmers that feeds the country.
And what sorts of cases are being brought against these small farmers?
Well, like Linda has experienced, their farms will be raided because, for example, they may not have a permit or a license to operate, or there could be an allegation of, some type of disease in a herd, which really doesn't exist. Yet, the government will come in, crack down on the producer, take the animals, and, take them off for slaughter.
Linda, how long have you been in the dairy business?
Well, we started our company back in 1993, and we brought sheep over in 1996 and officially started making cheese in 1997.
And you specialize in sheep's milk cheeses?
We used to before the government took them away and killed them.
They killed your sheep? Why?
Yes. They actually accused our sheep of being susceptible to mad cow disease.
Mad sheep disease?
No, mad cow disease.
Do sheep come down with that disease?
They accuse them of being susceptible to mad cow disease. There is a disease in sheep called scrapie. It's been around 250 years. It's endemic in the United States. And our sheep had absolutely nothing wrong with them. They didn't have scrapie. They didn't have BSE, which is the bovine form, what is commonly referred to as mad cow disease. And USDA came after our sheep because we had imported them from Europe, and we had worked very closely with USDA to bring them over, had them here for a few years, and then showed up at our farm and said, well, because they're from Europe, we want to kill them. And we said, there's no justification. There's nothing wrong with our sheep. This disease doesn't exist, and it fell on deaf ears. And to make a long story short, they showed up at 5:30 in the morning in the middle of a blizzard in Vermont with 42 armed federal agents, cleared out our barn of 125 sheep, and took the sheep out to Iowa and killed them for a disease that doesn't exist to this day.
And no one had gotten sick from your cheese?
No. No one got sick from anything, because you're talking about the theory, a theoretical possibility.
But, Gary, that seems to me to be an illegal act on the government's part.
Yeah, some would think so. The government has a lot of power, though, and in order to sue a governmental official for violating law, it's a very difficult standard to meet in a court of law. And also, many courts, they just defer to the USDA and the FDA as allegedly the agencies that have all of the expertise in enforcing the law. And so when you challenge USDA or FDA, you're really fighting an uphill battle.
But why would they go after a farm like this?
Well, to me, that's really the $64,000 question. Why are they even bothering with the small guys? We have, you know, hundreds of millions of pounds of hamburger that are being recalled. We have, you know, thousands of cases of people getting sick from eating, you know, contaminated spinach and tomatoes and green onions and peanut butter. Yet, for some reason, the government ignores the processing facilities and the large-scale agricultural producers who are actually, you know, the cause of all these foodborne outbreaks, and instead they're going after the small guys. And I used to be a former prosecutor for the state of Ohio, and I'm still scratching my head at why government insists on going after the small guys who are not contributing to the problem, and they just turn, you know, a blind eye and a deaf ear to the large, you know, agricultural corporations out there that are making us sick.
Linda, had the FDA given you any warning? Had someone come to you and told you that they were watching you and investigating you?
This actually went on for a few years, and we were dealing with the USDA. And so part of it is you have these different sections of USDA. So the people who helped us import the animals were extremely supportive, and it was a different branch of USDA. It was still within APHIS, the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service. But these are the mid-level bureaucrats who have an incredible amount of power. And to give an example, the Linda Detweiler was a senior staff veterinarian who was the main person behind going after our sheep. She ordered two criminal investigations of my husband. So here he had done absolutely nothing wrong, and the first criminal investigation was to see if anything in the way that we imported the animals was illegal. And they found out there was nothing wrong, and everything was fine. So they did another criminal investigation and then tried to do a personal investigation to see if Larry had anything in his background that they could use to fight against us, because this had started in 1998, and in 2001 was when they seized the animals.
Well, why do you think you were being targeted? You're not the only people who make sheep's milk cheeses.
No. And unfortunately, there's, like Gary said, there are so many people out there, in which Kristen has put together this incredible documentary which demonstrates it. And we still want to know why. You know, there's plenty of theories that we can put out there. USDA was not testing for mad cow disease, and in 1999, they had run more tests on our sheep looking for mad cow disease than on the entire population of cattle in the United States. And that, you know, there were trade wars with Europe because Europe won't accept American beef. And we have all these theories, but we still don't know why exactly.
Were you supported in the community?
Extremely supportive, yes. And people from all around the world, you know, sent letters and sent checks, and people were outraged. But when we went to court to fight USDA to stop them, the USDA attorney stood up and he said, the farmers have no rights. They have no right to be heard before the court, no right to question the USDA, and no right for independent testing. And unfortunately, that is exactly correct.
I'm talking with Linda Felice, a co-owner of the Three Shepherds Cheese Farm in Vermont, with Gary Cox, General Counsel for the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, and with Kristen Canty, who's been sitting here patiently. And we're going to get to you, Kristen, in just a moment. After we take a little break, she's the director and co-producer of a film called Farmageddon, which opens this Friday at Cinema Village. Stay with us. We're back with Kristen Canty, who is the director and co-producer of a film called Farmageddon, which features an awful lot of people who are in the food world, a wide range of experts. And also, as part of the mix, Linda Falaise, the co-owner of Three Shepherds Cheese Farm in Vermont, and Gary Cox, general counsel for the Farm to Consumers Legal Defense Fund. Kristen, you obviously started doing this, getting involved in this, because you became interested in the quality of our food?
Yes. I started getting involved with this 10 years ago when my son was sick. He was completely ridden with allergies and asthma. And the medications that he was on weren't working and were just making him sicker. And so I started on a path of research about why his immune system was depressed. And I was lucky to find the works of Sally Fallon Morell and Nourishing Traditions and Dr. Joe Mercola, and learned that many people, not all, but many, found relief from their allergies when they started to consume fresh, unpasteurized milk from the farm.
Raw milk.
Raw milk, yes.
Gary, what are the current regulations on producing, buying, and consuming raw milk in the United States?
Well, Leonard, it's a real hodgepodge. You got the federal level, and then you have the state level. And at the state level, there's about 28 states that allow the sale of milk in one form or another, either at a grocery store or at a licensed farm. But then there's 22 states that just flat-out prohibit the sale of raw milk. At the federal level, you've got a regulation, which the Legal Defense Fund is challenging right now, that prohibits the interstate transport of raw milk across state lines if you intend to consume it. So the federal government takes the position, basically, that if you're going to drink milk, it has to be pasteurized milk.
Well, pasteurization not only extends the shelf life of milk, but also helps prevent tuberculosis, brucellosis, diphtheria, scarlet fever, Q fever, kills some of the harmful bacteria, salmonella, listeria, yersinia. I can go on and on and on. So isn't it a good thing? Didn't we institute those rules for pasteurization because people were getting sick?
Those rules were instituted nearly a century ago now, and the production practices which required the implementation of these rules was vastly different than the husbandry practices that are practiced today by our small-scale farmers. You had cows in New York City and Boston and Philadelphia consuming swill as their diet, and that's what was contaminating the milk and making people sick after they consumed.
And we don't want cows in the city. Mrs. O'Leary's cow started the Chicago fire.
Right.
Kristen, weren't you concerned at all about the bacteria in milk when you started giving your son raw milk?
Absolutely. I researched the farm that I got the milk from. I went onto the farm. I spoke to the farmer. I read all of the research on both sides of the issue, the government warnings and the new numbers of people that had been healed of allergies and other ailments from milk or just felt better. And first I consumed a lot of it myself before I gave it to my child.
Well, Gary says some states you can buy it legally. Are you in one of those states?
Yes, I'm in Massachusetts, and I can buy my milk directly from the farm, which is great. And my farmer has 15 cows. Those cows are rotated. Their pasture is rotated daily. They milk with milking machines into stainless steel refrigerated tanks, and my milk is tested milk in Massachusetts is tested monthly in some towns and weekly in others.
But if you lived in New York State, you could not get raw milk.
You can. You are allowed to get raw milk from the farm in New York State also, which is great. In New York State and in Massachusetts, you're just not allowed, the farmer is just not allowed to sell the value-added products like butter, cream, and cheese aged under 60 days.
But I'd have to go to the farm because I do not see it even in the most sophisticated of stores.
No, you cannot buy it in grocery stores in Massachusetts or New York State. Only a few states allow the sale of it in grocery stores.
In your film, it's not only producers, but the individuals purchasing foods from the farms whose choices are compromised in many cases. Isn't it an individual's right to produce and eat whatever he or she wants?
I believe so,
unless
yes.
It's a drug that's illegal?
Yes, I believe so. That is exactly the point of my movie. The point of my movie isn't to get you to want to drink raw milk or eat this way or get your food from farmers. The point of my movie is freedom of choice.
And the film talks about several cases where food co-ops and farmer-owned markets were raided by police who were armed?
Yes. In many of the cases, the police were armed. In one case, there was a family of 10 children. They were kept in a room for 6 hours while about 11 armed agents came, held them at gunpoint for a number of hours while they tore their house apart for a third-degree misdemeanor of running a retail establishment without a license.
Were they running a retail establishment without a license?
Well, in my opinion, I think not. And Gary might be able to add more to this. In my opinion, we are allowed to form private food buying clubs so that we can purchase the foods that we want from the farmers that we want. Many of the farmers that Jackie Stowers was getting her food from had no way to get their products to market. She had 40 Amish farms around her that had no way to get their products to the consumer.
Gary, how do the laws work in terms of food co-ops? In New York, we have a lot of green markets. Are they all licensed?
It depends. It's a state-by-state issue. In Ohio, for instance, if I want to sell produce that's produced at my farm, I can sell it without a license as long as I don't process my produce, which means if I take carrots and I wash my carrots to get the dirt off them, I have now processed my carrots and I need a license to sell my washed carrots at a farmer's market. If I take some heads of lettuce and I just sell the head of lettuce whole, that's not processing the lettuce. I can do that without a license. But as soon as I start chopping up the lettuce, if I mix 4 or 5 different types of lettuces together, chop up some carrots, some cabbage, throw in some, sprouts maybe, then I've processed my food. I then need a license to do that. You asked a good question earlier, and Kristen picked up on this, about whether or not we have the right to produce and consume the foods of our choice. In our lawsuit against the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, in court papers that they filed with the court, made 3 really outlandish statements. Number one, they said, we do not have the right to eat any foods we want. Number two, FDA said, parents do not have the right to feed their children the foods of their choice. And number three, FDA said, nobody has the right to a healthy body. And these are just, they're mind-blowing statements from our government, and it really shows how out of touch the government is when it comes to the well-being of its citizens.
Well, I can see justification for the first two arguments, but not having a right to a healthy body?
That seems kind of weird.
Linda, did they raid your farm with guns?
Yes, they did. They didn't have any of the guns out, but they were all armed.
That must have scared you a bit, or at least
it did.
It told you couldn't protest too loudly.
Well, our farm is named Three Shepherds in honor of our three children. So we started our company. They were ages 6, 7, and 9, and they were very involved. Our son Francis was pasture manager. Our daughter Heather milked the sheep twice a day from May to October. And our youngest daughter Jackie became the cheesemaker. And, she got a lot of acclaim for it. Her cheese was featured on Martha Stewart. She had a full-page photo in Gourmet magazine by the time she was 15 years old. So this was a real family farm, very successful. And when USDA came after us, they spent, according to their court documents, $1 million monitoring us. They had 4 different people that were watching us from sunrise to sunset. And as part of the court documents, we've received the diaries. The day's broken down into 15-minute segments. It says what each of the family members are doing. And they watched us at least from July of 2000 to March of 2001.
Now, this is during the Bush administration, a time when we were told that regulations were pulled back. The film suggests that the government is really going after small farmers. It doesn't apply the same rules. As Gary mentioned earlier, most of the foodborne illness outbreaks involve large farms and large processing plants. So what do you think is going on here? Is government trying to protect the large farms at the expense of small farmers? I always thought that the government was involved in encouraging small farms.
That's that's the whole dichotomy of it, because you have the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which is involved in promoting agriculture, and it's also involved in regulating agriculture. And you have the Investigative and Enforcement Services, which is an actual branch of the USDA, and it's their own police force. And that's who they use when they do all these different raids. And our problem is the whole revolving door system. You have the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Monsanto, and the pharmaceutical companies who get members and their employees into USDA, and they just go back and forth. And so they're controlling the upper echelon of USDA.
Now, some farmers complained that the paperwork is overwhelming, that a large farm would have somebody who just handles the paperwork, but a small farm, you're making the cheese or you're growing the crops, and you're taking care of tons and tons of paperwork. How many papers did you have to fill out?
There is an incredible amount of paperwork, but particularly if you want to be certified organic, that's when it gets very expensive. It's very onerous. Whereas if you decide not to be organic and you say, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and use chemicals, you're free to go. There's no paperwork. USDA is not going to be monitoring you at all. But if you make the statement that I choose to be organic, there is an incredible amount of paperwork.
Now, Gary, in today's New York Times, Mark Bittman has a piece about the ag-gag laws that are being proposed in legislatures around the country. Which makes it illegal to videotape or photograph in the agricultural facilities that house almost all of our chickens and pigs. This also seems to be government protecting large agribusinesses. Why do you think that is?
Well, again, Leonard, that's the $64,000 question. I just don't understand why government is taking this position. Linda could be right. We could be having a revolving door problem where large agribusiness lobbyists gain access to USDA and FDA, and then those people who are employees of USDA and FDA who know how the system works may get hired by, you know, these large agribusiness companies. But I myself, I really don't know why the government is making this choice. It's a deliberate, orchestrated effort to gang up on the small farmers. But I really think that there's a tipping point out there, because this movement is consumer-driven. It's gaining momentum. The Legal Defense Fund is getting members all the time. We're becoming stronger. People are fed up with the government taking away their liberties and their freedoms. And I think you're starting to see it in the proliferation of farmers markets, grocery stores that are now offering locally produced foods and certified organic foods. And we even are making some efforts and some successes in several states through the introduction of legislation that recognizes, you know, the rights of small family farmers and the consumers.
Kristen, did you get to speak to people in government about why they have instituted these policies?
Unfortunately, it was very hard for me to get the people from the government agencies that had done this to speak to me. I was lucky enough to get a few people to speak in the movie, and you know, basically all they would say is that, you know, they would give the statement about why raw milk is so dangerous, why they prohibit it to cross state lines, and also to say that they need to keep us safe.
Well, you're not, are you doing raw milk cheeses, Linda?
Yes, we are.
And isn't that a big issue all around the world? In Europe, haven't farmers who've been producing raw milk cheeses for generations now been told that they can't in many instances?
Yeah, and there's no justification for it, because with the cheese making process, when you take milk and you make it into cheese, you're mimicking the natural process of a mother feeding her young. If you pasteurize the milk, you have to add the bacteria, which is the culture, and the rennet, which is the enzyme which makes it coagulate, but then you have to add calcium to it because the calcium's not available. If you have ultra-heat-treated milk or the ultra-pasteurized, so this is the milk that has a six-week shelf life, you can try to add culture and rennet and calcium, and it starts to form a curd, and then it rots, and it is physically impossible to make a cheese out of it. So that is exactly what's happening with that milk in your stomach.
Linda, a listener wants to know whether you got compensated for your sheep.
Not fairly, no. It costs us $5,000 per animal to bring them in, and they gave us a check for $1,300. Anyone that cooperated with USDA that we had sold sheep to got paid between $6,500 and $7,500. And we said, why the discrepancy? And USDA said, well, you chose to fight.
Congratulations. Linda Falaise is the co-owner of Three Shepherds Cheese Farm in Vermont. Gary Cox is the general counsel for the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. And Kristen Canty is the director and co-producer of a film called Farmageddon, which opens this Friday at Cinema Village. Thank you all so much for being on our show today.
Thank you for having us.